Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
Today we're discussing the great lockdown effects on spending and the housing market.
That's right, buddy. We're going to dive into some changes to our spending, the spending that the country is doing as a whole, right? It's changed dramatically. We're going to talk about that. We're going to take a couple listener questions later on as well, including one that's going to address the housing market. You know, like spring is typically a pretty hot time for housing, but that is not the case this year. And I think we all know why. So,
yeah, the virus, which need not be named.
That's right. Well, you've been listening to Harry Potter. Which book are you on, by the way?
I'm waiting for my local library to give me the audiobook of book 7. I'll be done.
Oh, my gosh. So you just finished 6.
6 so good.
It's so good. Pretty brutal at the end there.
It's true. Yeah. But man, yeah, I'm loving that series. And yeah, the guy who does the voice narration for the Harry Potter books is incredible. He really is.
Jim Dale. Yeah. Kate and I's relationship when we first started dating was we were long distance. And so we both associate Harry Potter with our early months and years of dating, because as we would drive to the different cities to visit each other, we would both listen to Harry Potter. And so, yeah, it kind of has a spot in our heart, in our relationship there at the beginning. But yes, the virus that shall not be named, the great lockdown, it seems like it's what this is being called now. We're in week 5, man. How are you guys holding up?
We're doing pretty good. Yeah, still pretty good. I think the getting back to school thing is taking a little bit more of a toll on the family, on the kids, trying to kind of get into that more regular school day. It just feels weird trying to do it from home, but we're doing our best.
Well, in particular, our school, the school that we send our oldest girls to, they've basically launched phase 3 of at-home learning, right? And they've gotten way more serious, and it's a lot harder.
Right, exactly. Before it was like, let's review some stuff, and you know what, do some related arts of your own. And now it's, no, we're going to do school for real. So
yeah, it's legit. It's a lot more pressure on our wives, since they're the ones taking care of the kiddos at home while you and I continue to work. We both have stay-at-home mamas holding down the fort. We're incredibly thankful for them, but it is not easy.
Yeah, they do the hard work around here. That's for sure.
Absolutely, man.
But first, we got to get to the good news, all right? That's what we try to start off each of these episodes with, is some good news of what's happening out there, even in the midst of health and economic turmoil. So yeah, the first item of good news we wanted to mention is stimulus checks. We just talked about these on Wednesday, Matt, and they are showing up in people's accounts. They actually started showing up, it seems like, either early this week or potentially late last week, from what I'm hearing from people, in their bank accounts. And that's great, right? We have a listener question about the stimulus checks that we're going to get to later in the episode. But I wanted to ask you, have you received yours yet?
Heck yeah, dude. It showed up earlier this week on April 15th. That was the date that they were targeting. I made a point to check it that morning because that is the date that Secretary Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, that's the date that they were gunning for. And he was saying that 80 million folks should have checks in their accounts by that date with a direct deposit. So yeah, we were one of those folks that got our payment right on time, which was nice, honestly, and it was a little surprising for it to show up like that.
I still haven't received mine, and I logged into the IRS website to kind of check and see the status. I believe mine said that the IRS had not determined my eligibility yet, and I think that might freak some people out if they know they're eligible and they get that response when they log in. Hmm. Don't get freaked out. I think it is them trying to process just so many payments in such a short amount of time. If you qualify, right, if you make under that adjusted gross income, which means you're actually going to get some sort of a payout, you will get it. Just be patient. I think we're going to see more payments hopefully next week and the following week. And hopefully before too long, we all get that money. I know for a lot of people, it's more of a need. And so I hate that people are having to wait, that anybody's having to wait. But it is certainly good news that a lot of Americans are getting that money and they're getting it now.
Yeah, and this is just speculation, but you just filed your taxes, right? Your 2019 tax
return?
Right,
yeah, just like a week and a half ago.
Yeah, I suspect this isn't at all confirmed anywhere, but I think that folks who have filed their taxes recently, it might be slightly slower, slightly delayed, as the IRS, as the federal government, is looking at the most recent return that has been filed. If you haven't filed your taxes yet, because you have until July 15th, you automatically get qualified based on your 2018 taxes. But once you do file your 2019 tax return, that is the return that they base your eligibility on. And so with it showing up, you know, I guess more recently, I don't know, I'm thinking it might delay things slightly. Plus, you're all about the snail mail, I know. You like receiving paper checks in the mail. So.
I'm like, I sent a letter to Secretary Mnuchin, and I said, yeah, if I could get it in the mail 4 months from now, that'd be great.
Yeah, I sent something via the post, and we're expecting a return in 2 weeks.
Some guy on horseback came by and just put it in his leather pouch.
That's right, so. Man. Kevin Costner, the postman. That's twice now we've referenced it in the past 6 months.
Yeah. Well, Matt, on that note, interestingly enough, Apple just launched a new iPhone SE.
I saw that.
You're still rolling with the old.
The original SE.
iPhone SE.
I love it because it's so small. Man, it made me so happy to see that Apple recognized that the SE has this little cult following because folks don't want the giant screens. Like, everybody loves the giant screens, but I don't want an entire tablet in my pocket when I'm going to the store, or I guess I'm not going to the store these days, when I'm going out for a walk, you know, yeah, or when I'm on my bike. I don't want to carry around a little portable computer. I want, like, just a small phone that happens to be able to do all the computer-like stuff.
Smart business move, too, because it'll be interesting to see how many people are willing to spend a third of their stimulus check on a much cheaper Apple phone. And it's just nice because for people that like Apple, the one drawback is the expense of the phones. And this is a really good phone at a much cheaper price point. Kind of, in my mind, the SE now compares to some of the, you know, more middle ground or even flagship Android phones that are in that $400 to $500 price range. So it's nice to kind of see Apple competing with a great phone in that, you know, lower price tier.
Does this mean you're even considering switching over from your Droid ways?
I'll think about it. But no, I don't know.
You're not diehard against it, which I've picked up on recently. You're like, it's not that you hate Apple products. You just have found what you're looking for when it comes to phones, from Droid.
Yeah, and I think there were a few things that Apple was missing for a couple of years that I really didn't like. And in particular, back in the iPhone 5 days, the screens were just really small, and I didn't like how small they were. And I feel like Apple in recent years has done a way better job, and they've adapted to some of the better parts of what Android offered. And so, yeah, I would consider moving to an iPhone now, whereas, yeah, years ago, I would have said, heck no.
Yeah, it's got that slightly larger screen. I think it moved from 4 inches to 4.7.
That's a lot better, though.
Which to most people, though, it's like, wait, what? Like, that sounds tiny.
I'm looking for that 9-inch screen.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree, though. I think it's a a brilliant business decision to kind of coincide the release of a new phone earlier this week. The same time, 80 million people get stimulus checks. But more good news, Joel. Let's run through it. Man, I'm not sure if we started offering up the good news before John Krasinski did, but he is actually doing a great job highlighting some happy stuff right now via his YouTube show that he films, I'm pretty sure, just in his house, like in his office.
I love he's got like two different camera angles and he just like vacillates between each one.
I'm pretty sure they're both shot with iPhones as well, yeah, which is basically how it goes these days. But yeah, on his video, on a show earlier this week, he announced how AT&T, speaking of cell phones and cell phone providers, but they're going to provide 3 months of free wireless service for nurses, for doctors, as well as other healthcare service providers. And they're offering that through the specific service that they offer for folks who work in the healthcare industry. Super cool. 3 months for free is pretty huge. And, you know, it's great to see them stepping up in that way.
Yeah. A couple other ways that healthcare workers are getting taken care of. Matt, I know you don't really like Costco, but some people do. Normal people do.
I don't. Here. Sorry for another quick rabbit trail. My parents recently brought us some Costco toilet paper.
Oh, yeah. The Kirkland Signature.
Yeah, because we were out and we couldn't get our hands on any. And so they brought us this giant industrial size thing of toilet paper. And I will say, it's really thick. Dare I say, too thick. I'm not used to using so few squares to wipe the bottoms in our household.
You're used to going with half ply, okay? But
hey, it's 2-ply, but it's reasonable thickness 2-ply. Nah. Like, our plumbing can't even hardly flush, like, our toilets can't flush this toilet paper down the toilet. It just sits on top of the water. It doesn't even, like, soak in. It's
now I feel like you're just looking for Costco complaints.
Dude, Costco is too much, right? Like, you could hang this toilet paper up in our studio here and it would help deaden the echoes. Like, that's how thick this stuff is.
All right. Well, I don't want to.
You know, I like griping about Costco.
But let's talk about the good thing that Costco's doing, okay?
They do some good stuff.
They're allowing healthcare workers and first responders to skip lines at stores, which, how cool is that?
That is cool.
And another benefit for healthcare workers, too, it's not life changing, but it is a thoughtful way to make sure that their lives are a little easier. Free Crocs right now. I got to be honest, you couldn't pay me to wear Crocs, but I do appreciate that they're giving away free Crocs to healthcare workers.
Well, I don't think you have to wear Crocs if you're a nurse, but I know a lot of nurses wear them.
It's almost a mandatory uniform.
Yeah. It's like a standard thing I think that nurses tend to wear. It's like the non-skid is important and you can, like, you know, disinfect them as needed if you get some gross stuff on your Crocs.
I feel like maybe chefs are into Crocs too.
Oh, yeah. I think I've seen chefs wear them before. But I will admit, I had a pair of Crocs back in the day. This is like 2000.
Everybody had
did
a pair.
Did you have a pair back in the day?
Of course. Everybody did. Okay, but not anymore, man.
Yeah, me neither. And one other piece of good news that we want to mention is that Citigroup, they are offering their would-be summer interns full-time jobs. During a time when there is so much uncertainty, it's really great seeing a company step up and provide some solid financial footing for recent graduates who are going to be entering the workforce. And so that's after their internship, right? So they've got full-time jobs lined up. But then in addition to that, these Citi interns, they will also be paid for the 10 weeks they were supposed to have worked this summer, right? So obviously right now you can't go into, you know, one of the giant Citigroup offices, one of the headquarters in like London or Hong Kong, New York, perhaps, but they are getting paid for that anyway. So yeah, move over stimulus check. We got that Citigroup money rolling in if you are one of those lucky interns. That's great.
Should have applied for that internship, man. What was I thinking? Back in my day, Matt, they didn't used to pay interns. So I was an unpaid intern in my first stint in media. But I love that interns are getting paid. I think they should get paid. I think that's a good thing to do. And I love what Citi is doing here. And in particular, saying, you know what? All of you are going to have a job at the end of this, which is really cool. But Matt, let's get on to kind of some of the topics that we wanted to cover besides just all the good news. And one of the things we wanted to cover on today's episode is the changing face of how we're spending as consumers. The New York Times dove into the numbers recently from a research company that tracks credit and debit card transactions, and the changes are remarkable. They've been swift. So like some spending is up, of course, with more folks cooking at home, online grocery delivery, and meal kits. They've seen a massive number of new adopters. Matt, I looked up Blue Apron stock, and it was down to $2 a share recently, and it's up to about $12 a share right now. Yeah. So there's been this just massive uptick in people subscribing to services like Blue Apron, checking that out.
And by the way, that's not an endorsement to buy single stocks or Blue Apron stock.
No, if you can go back in time and you can buy it at $2 a share, you should do that. But
also pick up that sports almanac as well.
Yeah. And Matt, we had an episode where we talked to Beth Monsell about cooking at home on a budget. We highly recommend people going back and listening to that. That was episode 181, if you didn't get to check that out. But you know, she actually made reference to these meal delivery services and said, yeah, they're not a terrible idea, but the better idea is to buy stuff at your local grocer, preferably an Aldi. And she's got some great recipes teed up for people to cook better at home.
Yeah, so more folks are spending money on groceries since they're staying at home and cooking, and even on these meal-in-a-box delivery services like Blue Apron. Spending is up there, but shopping and just overall consumer spending is down. One economist stated that this is the sharpest decline in consumer spending that we've ever seen. And of course, Joel, anything and pretty much everything travel-related has suffered majorly, from airlines to gas stations, electric scooters. They have all seen massive declines. And it'll certainly be interesting to see which of these patterns stick around and which ones melt away as our lives hopefully begin to return to a somewhat more normal state in the coming weeks. Because essentially, the demand is there, right? It's just being paused. Like, people want to spend money. A lot of people want to be able to go out into restaurants and spend their money, you know, on sports and just all the things that they're normally used to. But because of the health crisis, we can't. And so it's different in a lot of ways than the Great Recession and the Great Depression. The Great Lockdown is odd, at least right now, because we want to spend money. A lot of us, you know, have some funds that we're willing to spend. We just can't. We're not being allowed to spend that money. And so as long as the lockdown is still going on, though, I think we'll continue to see spending sort of reflect that. But as soon as, you know, the quarantine is lifted a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised if we see spending surge. I don't think it'll make up for all that lost spending over the past, you know, weeks and maybe even months. But it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what that bounce back looks like, because I'm not as optimistic as you that it's going to be immediate after the lockdown is over, because a lot of us are going to be fearful to go to sporting events for a while. I don't think we're going to see 50, 60, 70,000 people jammed into a stadium. I think we're going to see more sparsely attended events. And two, just with the unemployment, how long lived is that going to be? You know, I'm hoping that these additional months of unemployment benefits are going to bridge the gap and allow people to continue to spend like they normally would. But that remains to be seen, too. So, yeah, how quickly are things going to bounce back? I mean, I'm optimistic about the American economy as a whole. And if we're talking about more than just the next few months, we're going to be fine. Things are going to bounce back. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see the trajectory, what that looks like. And, yeah, the pacing of the recovery.
I hear you.
And Matt, as we're kind of trying to figure out what the pacing is going to look like, it's really interesting to see that one of the lead indicators of what the recovery looks like could potentially be something really obscure and something that most of us don't think about as being an economic indicator, and that is electricity usage. And, you know, the New York Times had another story that I found fascinating, and it basically said that most economic indicators work on some sort of a delay, like unemployment benefits. We find out the previous week's unemployment filings a week down the road. But electricity usage can give us a peek into what's actually happening with the economy with almost no delay at all.
Yeah, not to mention even larger economic indicators like quarterly reports and, you know, the GDP, typically delayed by months to see, you know, how things were going in, you know, the previous quarter.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know exactly what the losses are going to look like for some of these big companies yet. We'll find that out. But charting the overall electricity usage in the country can be helpful to figure out, well, what's happening right now. So we've had a sharp decline in usage, and that's mostly because of all the businesses that are currently closed, like restaurants, theaters, bars, salons, etc., right? And I think that's just kind of this interesting thing that I know for me, I'm going to keep tracking that. When you look back at 2008 and the Great Recession, the pick back up in electricity usage did seem to mirror kind of a bounce back in the overall economy. So it will be fascinating to see if that same correlation still holds true in the aftermath and bounce back from, you know, the Great Lockdown.
You know, obviously, we're talking about economic indicators here, right? And when it comes to electricity, we're looking at energy use as a clear indicator. But interestingly, we've also been able to see environmental real-time changes as well. I'm thinking about NASA. They published some of these photos in China before and after the lockdown, you know, their lockdown, and the amount of pollution, the decrease in pollution was mind-boggling.
I've seen pics of Los Angeles too, and it's had a big difference there.
So much clearer. And so obviously, you know, this is an environmental change, but it's important to see that, you know, some of these changes that are occurring aren't necessarily economic related, and they're not energy related, but they're environmental, and some of these changes that we're seeing are positive. And so it's not all negative. You know, we are seeing numbers drop, but when it comes to the environment and just kind of, you know, what the world looks like right now, at least there's an upside there.
Yeah, some good news. And obviously, tracking electricity use is not an exact science, but it is an interesting indicator. Found that fascinating. All right, Matt, let's get into some of our thoughts on the housing market, the spring housing market in particular. We've got a listener who's under contract on a house and wants to know what to do. We'll get to that right after the break.
All right, Joel, we're back from the break, and man, what is up with the housing market, right? It's spring. Generally, this is the busiest time for homes to be bought and sold, but that is not the case right now. We've got a listener question about the housing market from Robin.
Hey, guys. Love your show. I'll keep it straight to the point. Is buying a home right now a good idea? My fiance and I have been looking for a home for the past several months prior to this whole pandemic, or actually during. But within the last few weeks, we got an offer accepted. We went to escrow the first week of the stay-at-home order that was issued out in Southern California. We currently live in Los Angeles, California, where the market is extremely competitive and ridiculously overpriced. But we've been told by several of our colleagues, friends, and family members that just to wait because the housing market's going to go down. They're saying it should be a buyer's market within the next 6 to 8 months. We love the home we're in escrow for, but obviously we're getting cold feet because of what's happening. We would love to hear what you both think. Anyways, thank you guys for listening to this response and look forward to hearing to what you guys have to say. Bye.
Robin, that's a great question, and it's certainly something that we need to address because a lot of people who, whether they're under contract on a home right now or they're just kind of thought that this spring market was the time to buy or sell a home, it's important for us to think through, you know, what the implications of this pandemic are on the housing market. So let's get into it, Matt. I think the first thing we have to admit is that it's hard to know what's going to happen with the housing market in the next few weeks or in the next few months. And so Robin talking to his friends about many, many months down the road, what's going to happen with the housing market. None of us can be sure about what's going to happen. But we do have some peaks, I would say, into what is going on. I think we're definitely seeing many buyers waiting to purchase a home, especially with most of us being locked in our homes. We're basically prevented from doing an in-home walkthrough of a house that we're interested in, right? And so these people might have been looking recently, but they put their search on hold for now because of COVID-19. Banks have also seen that home purchase loan applications have fallen for 4 consecutive weeks to the lowest level since 2015. So there is an immediate and current impact on the market right now.
Yeah, man. And so the question we're asking now is, you know, will it be a buyer's market 6 months from now? That's almost an impossible question to answer. But I'm not as confident as your friends and your family members that the housing market will continue to deteriorate. For one, mortgage rates are incredibly low, and so that means that homes are more affordable for everyone right now. But if folks hold out due to the health crisis, there's a good chance that there will be a lot of pent-up demand to buy 6 months from now, or whenever we begin to resume, quote unquote, normal life.
Yeah. And at the same time, housing inventory is low. It's been low for years, right? There haven't been this few homes on the market since 2013. So while we could see a little dip in housing prices as unemployment numbers increase, it's no guarantee. So if you are under contract on a home that you love and that you plan on living in for a long time, I think, Matt, our advice would be go through with it. Buy the home. Take advantage of the uber low rates right now. Lock in a long-term, incredibly favorable mortgage rate on a home that you really, really want to live in, and try not to think too much about where home prices will be in the future.
Yeah, Robin, your questions had mostly to do with like the market, right? And so there's basically two considerations that you want to take into account if you're looking at a home: personal considerations and then market considerations. We don't really know what the market's going to do. And so what we want to address specifically here is your, you know, your personal considerations. Like if you guys really love the house, buy it. If you guys are in a solid place financially, right? Like if you've got plenty of cash for that down payment, for furnishing that home, for any repairs that you might have to make shortly after. Oh, and jobs as well. Like you want to make sure that you've got a job that's, you know, where you're gainfully employed, and that's going to be super solid for the foreseeable future. The last thing we would want for you to do is to get a new mortgage, and then 8-12 months from now, you know, it's you're strapped and you can't pay that mortgage payment because maybe, you know, one or both of you have lost your job. That would be a really difficult position to be in. So it's good to be aware to what the market's doing, but don't forget about those personal factors as well.
Yeah. And depending on the price of the home, Matt, the fact that the interest rate is incredibly low matters a lot. If interest rates bumped up even just half a point, that price reduction that you might end up getting if the market did end up dipping, well, the lower mortgage rate might be even more impressive than a small price concession. So yeah, that's an important factor and something that's definitely in your corner right now, Robin, when you're buying this home. And Matt, on that note, we're talking about getting a mortgage. I read a story this week about lending standards going up. And I think I mentioned that this might be the case a couple of weeks ago, that we saw this after the Great Recession in 2008. We saw banks tightening their lending standards and being more forcible in proving a good credit score, decent income, stuff like that.
You want to know how difficult it was to buy your first home as a small business owner that had been in business for less than 2 years? Incredibly hard.
Yeah, you had to prove a lot.
Personal experience, man. It was so stinking hard for us to get approved for a loan because we didn't have that history of corporate tax returns to give to the banks. And so it was so much work, a lot of manual underwriting and them asking where every single dollar came from, which we're seeing already. But yeah, I think we can expect to see more of that.
Yeah, and specifically Chase Bank is upping their credit score requirements. You have to have at least a 700 credit score, and you're going to be required to make a down payment equal to 20% of the home's value. So Matt, that's kind of what we recommend already, is to try to put 20% down to have a good credit score, right?
But now they're making you do it.
And your credit score is going to become even more important as you seek a mortgage with other lenders too. So just important to note that if you are buying a home, pay special attention to the requirements that a credit union or a bank is placing on you. And shopping around might become even more necessary, especially if you don't have that high credit score and you don't have that vast savings to put 20% down.
Yeah, and aside from new home purchases, you know, refinancing is making more and more sense for a greater number of folks as well. But again, these increased lending standards could really make it difficult for many folks who would benefit to be able to take advantage of the low rates currently being offered. And Joel, at the top of the episode, you know, we're talking about the stimulus checks. We're mentioning how, you know, they showed up on time just as they were promised. And so our next listener question has to do with that money specifically that a lot of us have already received.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Lauren calling from Chicago. First off, thanks so much for all the topics you've already covered. Building off of episode 188, could you dive into possible tax implications of these stimulus checks? I've heard it's a loan, grant, and recently that it replaces our 2020 tax return, so that it might be beneficial to freeze tax deductions presently. So I would love if you could dive into that. Thanks so much, and all of your help is appreciated.
Lauren, that's a great question. Yeah, we just talked about what to do with your stimulus checks on episode 188, but we didn't talk about the tax implications. We should have done it. Yeah, so it is important to note these stimulus checks or payments are not taxable income. They are structured as refundable tax credits. So the good news is that the whole $1,200, if you're eligible for that amount, or $2,400 as a couple, or if you've got 18 kids and it's $500 per kid, that's a lot of money too. All of that is yours. So use it wisely and know that you're not going to be paying any sort of tax on the stimulus money you're receiving.
That's right. The stimulus checks do not count towards your taxable income, unlike unemployment benefits. That's something that we, you know, a lot of folks are receiving that they're going to have to report as that contributes to their income. But yeah, no income taxes on this money. And Joel, I think one of the reasons too that we're seeing a lot of folks confused and thinking that this is sort of like an advance on their 2020 tax return is because of the fact that it's falling on April 15th, right? It's falling on a date that is typically associated with a tax return, with a refund. And I think that's kind of gunking up the gears a little bit. You know, folks are kind of getting their wires crossed. And with these stimulus checks being based on what we made previously, right, in 2018 or 2019, I've seen some questions arise where folks are afraid that by making more money this year in 2020, that they're going to have to owe some of this money back. That's also not the case. This is purely based on previous year's returns. And if you happen to make more money this year somehow in 2020, well, you're not going to end up owing any of that money back to the government. So no worries there.
Yeah, that's helpful information, Matt. The way our taxes are structured, there are all sorts of different things that we get. Is it a deduction? Is it a credit? Is it a refund? Like, what is it? And those are all look differently when it comes to our taxes. And so, yeah, but this one is specifically a credit. And once that money is in your hands, you will not be taxed on it and it can never be clawed back. So, yeah, great news for all of us, right?
Yeah, Joel, interestingly, in the bank account where I received our stimulus check, that deposit, it was actually labeled as a refund. It was so it's a refundable tax credit. It had that REF, which I assume is refund. Maybe it means reference to something else. I don't know. But when I saw it, I thought, oh, cool, refund. And, you know, IRS, it was all there. But yeah, hopefully if you haven't received yours already, you are.
Let's hope they're in all of our accounts shortly. So, all right, man, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks that want more money info, head to our website, howtomoney.com.
All right, buddy. Well, that's going to be it. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.